105 Drive with Julian Clover. Cambridge
105. And on the, I think it's the first, it is the first Friday of the month, isn't it? Had to check that for a moment, as we always do. It's wine, and here with us once again is Nigel Beaumont. Hello, Nigel.
Evening, Julian.
And you've been away, I think, the last couple of weeks or so, at least earlier on.
Yes, at the end of October, early November, I was away and spent a very enjoyable week in the southern Rhone area of France. It's a place I know reasonably well because I enjoy the wine in particular from that area.
And it's an opportune moment, really, to look at the wines from some of there. So what are some of the characteristics of the wines of the southern Rhone?
Well, the thing is, in particular, that it's primarily a red region because of the great deal of sunshine and the warmth that you have in the Rhone Valley. You'll find that the reds are far more dominant, and the flavours are far stronger, you know, than the whites. The whites really don't thrive in very hot temperatures. But I wanted to just highlight the fact that there is another part of the Rhone Valley which people think less of or speak less of because it's much more higher priced, the wines that are produced there. That's the Northern Rhone, which is principally quite hilly. The vineyards are on terraces, fairly steeply banked up from the river, and that means that most of the grapes are hand-picked.
And when you say higher price, how much higher than sort of your average bottle?
Well, one of the vineyards which I'll highlight is Côte Rôtie, and in the list of wines which are going on the website, there's a bottle there for £30, I think it is. And that would be typical. The other names to look out for are Crow's Hermitage and Hermitage. Very well-known names, but very pricey. But the reason for the cost is that they're hand-picked and obviously very low production levels. So not perhaps something that we would see on our tables or drinking just casually. Whereas the Southern Rhone, of course, produces a lot more wine. It's produced wine since Roman times, and it is particularly known for the Côte de Rhône wines, which come in a variety of different qualities, and we'll find them in the shops. And I thought that I'd just list some of them. But before I did that, just speak about the non-Côte de Rhône region where we stayed, in fact, which is around the Ventoux and Luberon.
Now, that rings a bell. That's something sort of Tour de France is kind of well-known patch for them in that area, is it not?
Well, that's right. Mont Ventoux is one of the most feared parts or stages of the Tour de France. It's a very steep mountain. In fact, the highest peak in Provence, often snow-capped in the winter. Notoriously feared by the riders, and the English rider Tom Simpson died there in the 1960s from heat exhaustion.
Oh, really? Wow.
And there's a nice memorial halfway up there. And also, of course, more recently, Chris Froome was the first British rider in 2013 to win the Mont Ventoux stage. It's tough. Even driving up it, you can feel sorry for them.
Really? It's that bad.
You sort of have to congratulate them as they're halfway up, but you would never want to do it unless you were extremely fit. But having said that, because it's slightly more mountainous, it produces slightly different wines. It's a cooler climate and a slightly different terroir. So you'll get slightly less fruity wines, and you'll find that they're not quite as expensive as the most pricey Côte de Rhône. So just going on to onto Côte de Rhône, it becomes a bit confusing because there are really four different levels of Côte de Rhône, which you'll be able to identify by the labels on the bottles. The AOC, the Appellation Côte de Rhône, which are the most common, and you'll see a lot of them in the shops, selling for probably around about £6 or £7, I suppose. They're very approachable, very easy drinking reds. The next level up are Côte de Rhône Village. Now, they are distinguished by the fact that you still have Côte de Rhône on the label, but you have the name of the village somewhere in the text below that. There are about 95 producers that are identified within the area that have the right to actually put the village name on their labels. Above that, you then get the named village. So these producers, there's 18 of them, can put the name of the village first and Cote de Rhone after that. And these are very high quality wines, as I say, coming from only 18 villages in the area. And finally, you'll get the Cru, which are the very best wines, and some of the names which most people recognize being Baume de Venise, Gigondin, Rasto, Vaqueros, and of course, Julian, what's the best known wine?
Oh dear, it's something like Chateau Neuf, has to be, doesn't it?
Indeed it is. It's Chateau Neuf de Pape. That is translated as the Pope's New Castle. It was established in the early 1300s when the Pope and his entourage decamped from Rome to...
Do we know which Pope?
I did read it, but I don't remember.
Okay,
which.
Not to worry.
But he decamped to Avignon, and of course anyone who's visited Avignon might have been to the Pope's palace there, and it's quite spectacular. But Chateau Neuf de Pape is his mountain retreat. And the wines that are produced there are exceptional. Very intense, big, beefy wines, medium tannins. Now, they're made, as are all the Cote de Rhones, from a mixture of three principal grapes, and they're known as the GSM blend. Grenache, which produces the real fruitiness. Syrah, also known as Shiraz in the New World. And Mourvèdre, which is also added. And that is the common blend for all of the Cote de Rhone wines. Chateau Neuf de Pape stick very firmly to that blend, and it produces a very high alcohol, very fruity wine.
Yeah, sorry, go on. Sorry, Nigel, I was interrupting there.
No, that's okay. I was just going to add that, in fact, they have the opportunity to blend with 13 different wines, and that's allowed by the AOC, but in fact, they find the most successful being those three.
So pretty much red wines. Are there any whites or rosés there at all?
Very few. As I said right at the beginning, it's not an ideal climate or terroir for white wine grapes. You'll find a few in the Northern Rhone area grown, and one or two vineyards do produce whites, but they are not really noted for their quality. One village that produces an exceptional rosé, though, is the Tavel. And it produces a strong, we call it beefy sort of rosé. Normally you think of more delicate flavours with rosé, but this is something that should really be drunk with food rather than as an aperitif. But if you look for the name Tavel on the labels, you'll be sure to get a really nice rosé. The majority of the whites otherwise are from blends, and you'll find the dominant grape is the Grenache Blanc or the Viognier. And most of them will come from the Ventoux region and Luberon, which is east of Avignon. So essentially, if you're looking for a good red, an easily drinkable red that at a reasonable price, look at the Cote de Rhone. But perhaps if you want something slightly more expensive, just look for the Cote de Rhone Village, perhaps, or if you can run to it, one of the Cru wines.
OK, Nigel, thank you very much. I know Neil enjoys his wine. Are you familiar with the wines of the Cote de Rhone, by any
yes.
chance?
Well, I make it my mission in life, frankly, to be an independent researcher when people like this come in. I'm not a great New World fan. I like the traditional wines, the Spanish, the French, the Italian. They're my favourites.
So you're right.
A Riesling, which was really, I mean, Riesling back in the early 70s was really popular, went out of fashion, in came all the other stuff. But you can still get a nice Riesling. And Muscadet is my personal little secret favourite. That seems to have disappeared off the shelves, but is available if you go looking for it.
Yes, the problem is that they're not that popular, therefore you can't really source them from the supermarkets.
Yeah.
And that's why they're not seen as often.
No, but it's lovely if you get pretty much with anything, fish, chicken, anything. Muscadet goes nicely with that. Mm. He says, that's something for tonight then.
Yes, indeed. I'll put that on the agenda. Item two, please.
Item two.
Neil, what have we got after 6 o'clock?
Oh, I'm just in such a good mood. It's the end of the week, and I know it's a bit dark and wet out there, but just all the usuals. The 70s, 80s classics, another track off the new Level 42 album, some Lisa Stansfield, which I found lurking at the bottom of a cupboard, and T Connection, who we haven't heard from, I don't think, ever since I've done the warm-up.
Tea Connection. That rings a faint bell, but
you've been wearing flares at the time.
You think, okay, yes, yeah. I just wonder if it might have come up in the Reverend Chambers slice of cheese or something like that. Is always a possibility. Thank you, Neil. We'll see you after six.
After six.
Weekend warm up.